Hello and welcome to the Majlis, Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis and Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. Soon, people of Uzbekistan will be headed to the polling stations to elect their next parliament. This will be the first such election exercise after President Mirziyoyev's own elections in 2016. I guess there are five parties on the ballot, which is to say, in a way, this is a multi-party election, at least this is what the authorities want to call it. But some observers say there are no teeth in this argument, given all parties are aligned with the state. With elections planned for December 22nd, one wonders how much of an election is this? What candidates are talking about? What are their policy lines and how they differ from each other? To discuss all these, I'm joined by two speakers who are currently on the ground in Uzbekistan. Steve Sverdlo, currently a consultant with UN agencies on human rights in Central Asia. Nobahar Imamova, a journalist with the Voice of America's Uzbek service. And Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia, below Kishlok Owazi. He is joining us from Prague. Welcome on board, colleagues. So let me begin with you, Nobahar. We have only 1 week to go. How you would describe the election atmosphere now in Uzbekistan?
It's a very exciting and dynamic atmosphere as far as Tashkent, the Uzbek capital, is concerned. You know, you already have dozens of international visitors, experts, people who are here to observe, to monitor the election process. There is obviously a huge, you know, international interest as far as Tashkent is concerned. That's what we hear from the Uzbek officials. So officially, you know, the government is very happy with the interest. I sense that a certain level of nervousness because, you know, to be honest, nobody has any illusions about what will happen on December 22nd. You know, we don't hear from the government, at least, that, okay, you know, this will be these groundbreaking, democratic, free and fair elections. What you hear constantly from everybody relevant is that, you know, this will be a better election. So five parties, you know, they're running political ads, which is quite new for the country. You see their political ads on, you know, in the streets. You see them on TV. You see them online. Pretty much every second day here, there's a live debate on some channel somewhere in Tashkent. There is an international press center, very active, where you can have live press conferences, live broadcasts. So better conditions for journalists to cover the process, more, I would say, exposure. But then, you know, you have some of the basics, which are not really changed. I mean, you just mentioned five parties, and when you look at their platforms, not much really makes them, you know, to stand out.
There is a new party. Let's get into the party details a little bit later. Now, I also wanted to take, Steve, your point on the same thing, like in terms of the atmosphere there. I mean, what sort of things you see, which is usually attached to the election process in any other country?
Yeah, thanks, Mohammed. And just to start out by saying I'm appearing here in my independent capacity as a human rights lawyer, not a representative of any UN agency. But I think that Nabuhor is correct that there is this dynamic energy that, of course, is really unfamiliar to those of us that have been following Uzbekistan for a while. Because, yes, indeed, I've had an opportunity to speak with some of the people running from different parties, at least two of the parties, and some of them quite sincerely describe that they feel pressure to campaign. They feel that they have to be competitive. They're, as Nabuhor said, they've been forced to debate. You know, I was talking to a candidate from Namangan, from the Adolat party, who said, you know, I've got three people I'm competing against in Namangan. They're journalists. We're having open debates. And they're telling me that, you know, I've already served one or two terms and it's time for me to leave. And I've got to prove my candidacy to my constituents, which is, again, I hear this and I say, really? Is that, are you really feeling at risk? And then you compare that information from some of the candidates to that guy on the street, the taxi driver, the waiter, the waitress. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people over the last few weeks who are still very cynical and say everything's preordained, everything's already set in advance. And so I'd say that dynamism and the energy is mostly in Tashkent, mostly among those of us that are seeing some green grass shoots of change coming, you know, emerging in Uzbekistan. But there's still this fundamental issue, which is that the way these elections are structured, they aren't free and fair. They are more competitive, but they're not fundamentally free or fundamentally fair. We can get into some of those specifics of that.
When you say not free and fair, What do you mean by that? Very briefly.
Well, not free and not fair. That means that there should not be barriers to entry. Essentially, as Nabuhur laid out, these five parties and only these five parties have been able to register to participate. So no independent candidate can enter this race and no independent parties can enter this race. And of course, no opposition parties either, those abroad or those that would want to form inside Uzbekistan. And that is a problem. That barrier to entry makes the elections not free and fair. But in the way the elections will be conducted, those are the questions that are more sort of under a question mark. You know, where will people's actual votes actually be counted? That's, I think, something that, at least my sense, is the authorities are trying to approach that in a new way, which is really allow people to come to the polls and have their votes, the ones that they actually cast, be the ones that, get counted.
It pretty much sounds like the way the elections are held in Iran. Let's see. Bruce, what do you see when you look into this process? What do you see from abroad?
Well, I mean, I agree that it's certainly fascinating to watch the excitement that this has generated among some people in the foreign community and even some Uzbek officials, because, of course, you know, as we've heard, we basically have five pro-presidential parties that are running, and they're really, while they try to distinguish themselves on some issues, you know, I think a lot of the core issues that would get the population more excited are just, you know, ignored or glossed over entirely. I mean, it was pointed out that, for instance, they're having all kinds of problems, energy problems, heating, electricity, things like that. And yet this isn't an issue that any of the parties have addressed. So, you know, you get some of this stuff, but it's a little bit more jazzed up than it was in previous years. You know, but I mean, I totally agree with the point that there's, you know, sadly, there are no independent candidates or truly genuine opposition parties involved in this. And I would have thought at least independent candidates might be something that they would bring back. I mean, the last time they did that was the 2004 parliamentary elections. And then they passed legislation in 2008 to ban that. But this would have been more or less harmless, because with five parties, you can pro-presidential parties, you can guarantee that the parliament's going to be packed with presidential supporters. Right. It would have made more sense to let some independents run so that they could have got a handful of seats to kind of, you know, spice things up a little bit. But we didn't even go that far with this one.
Bruce, why is that? I mean, it's pretty obvious that even the pro-president parties are going to have the majority. Then why not to allow a couple of independents to come in? I understand. Perhaps I don't understand maybe why they are blocking the opposition to come in. So what's the logic behind this from the authorities' perspective? Are they scared of something?
Well, I think because this is the first parliamentary election that's being conducted with Shavkat Mirziyoyev as president, they're trying to stick somewhat to the script that's already been established for the country. As for why they fear independence, this goes back a little bit to the 2007 presidential elections, when Sanjar Umarov of the Sunshine Coalition decided he was going to run as an independent because it was possible to run as an independent up till then. And I believe Akmal Saidov actually did in the end run as an independent, but it kind of scared the authorities that they had a legitimate opposition contender for a while until charges came up against him. I'm talking about Sanjar Umarov, and he had to flee the country eventually. But, you know, that kind of spooked him, and they decided that they would just get rid of that so that it wouldn't be a headache for him in the future. And then, of course, there was a lot of propaganda that surrounded that with various officials and experts appearing on TV and radio to explain that since so many people in the country were involved with political parties anyway, it didn't seem to make a lot of sense to have independent candidates. But, you know, like I said, it clearly there's some people with some fresh ideas who understand their constituencies probably better than the candidates who are running for seats in those constituencies. And it would just help if they would, like I said, something fresh, something new injected into parliament that at the same time doesn't really represent a threat to the established order in the country at the moment.
Now, these all pro-government parties, Nabuhur, what they are really talking about? I mean, what are their slogans?
I mean, there is a lot of new things you hear from them. I mean, you know, earlier Bruce mentioned that some of the critical issues are not being discussed. Actually, they are. You know, the lack of electricity, the lack of the shortage of gas in the regions. You hear them being discussed, actually, in the debates. They're being covered also in local media. What's not happening is that, you know, most of the coverage and most of the discussion is quite superficial. So you almost feel like they need to mention mention these issues, but they're not necessarily going to the bottom of these issues, you know. So you don't hear candidates or parties saying, well, this is because of the wrong policies in place, or this is because of the Mirziyoyev's, you know, decisions. What you hear is that, well, the infrastructure is old, the supply system, you know, is broken, and, you know, we basically don't produce them, we don't distribute them well. So it's the discussion, it's the shallowness of the discussion, I would say. So that might be the issue. Pretty much every party, you know, again, supports President Mirziyoyev. They think that Uzbekistan is in the right path and that they all support the current reform agenda, and they don't necessarily offer to dramatically change anything. The environmental party stands out by basically pushing specifically, you know, for what they call ecological issues of the country, but they get criticized a lot by the general public by just being, you know, not political. You know, I hear it was very interesting to watch some debates where other parties were accusing the environmental party or criticizing the environment party for not really being political, whereas they don't necessarily have that kind of a political agenda themselves too. So it's quite primitive. I mean, you know, speaking politically and policy wise, what's changed again is that, you know, they allow, they want to show themselves, they want to promote ideas that they believe in. It's, you know, we may not like the ideas, but they're fighting for something,
but showing themselves within a very limited choice of topics, I guess. Steve, you are also on the ground, and because of your background, you very much focus on the human rights aspect of the life of the society there. So how much of a discussion is there about the human rights torture in prison? What kind of ideas are there to improve these things among the candidates?
Yeah, no, well, the answer to that is not that I have heard. As Nabuhor says, this delicate balance where you can tell that people are channeling, or candidates, I should say, are telegraphing or reflecting some level of serious social discontent over the serious economic problems that the country is facing, the lack of electricity, just the low living standards, the lack of business opportunities, high unemployment. Those things are coming through one way or another, as Nabuhor said, in a shallow way. So those grievances, I can see those being aired.
But you can talk about those things even without the election, right? It's not a sensitive topic. Now we are talking about the competition between the political parties to be elected into the parliament. I mean, this has to be a different level. That's what I'm saying.
Right. And I was going to say, I think you're right. Well, those issues are sensitive to the extent they deal with powerfully vested interests of different hakims, different factions, I'd say, in the government that have economic interests and policies that could be potentially be at risk, projects that they want to pull through in this, in the next few years. But I was going to say that when it comes to, as you asked, civil or political rights, absolute no-no, we have not heard that. But I want to say one more thing, which I think we keep coming back to, is it's very interesting that I've encountered candidates who, you know, I ask them, well, what are you doing? How are you spending your time in the days leading up to the election? And a few of them say, oh, yeah, I've been at the polling station from morning until night. I've been lobbying voters. I've been going door to door. And they're really serious. They're actually doing this. And then on the other end, you talk to other people who say, I'm living in such and such neighborhood or such and such district, and I, for the life of me, cannot find out who is running in my neighborhood. And so there's these sort of two parallel realities that I think are actually coexisting, which is one part of the political elite has really bought into this notion that these elections are happening and they're real. And another part of the electorate, probably a much larger part of the electorate, is saying this is a show.
A couple of days ago, I've seen a video clip on Ozotlik, our Uzbek service of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, of a campaign event in Termez, where the event turned into chaos when the candidates couldn't even talk about how they are planning to fix the energy crisis. Energy crisis, you know, it should be very innocent topic to talk about, but again, they couldn't. And then people who were there to participate in this process, they got mad, I believe. When there are very basic things are being discussed now. I mean, have you seen anyone falling into trouble by talking some unorthodox issues like human rights, like torture in jail, or like political or economic freedom? Have you seen anyone getting in trouble by talking about that?
Mohammad, right before the election campaign started, and the campaign started on September 30th, right before that, we had a local lawmaker in Tashkent region discussing the plight of the Uyghurs. Mm. And he was calling on the Uzbek government to support Uyghurs, to show compassion towards them, you know, basically calling on the Uzbek society to be more aware about what China is doing to the Uyghurs. So his party actually punished him by taking his name out of the list, or basically by kind of pushing him aside by not making him a part of this process. That was something that caused, you know, sort of like a scandalous event here. But other than that, we haven't really seen any major scandals. I hear a lot of sensitive issues being mentioned, I mean, to be honest. And then both privately and, you know, both on the record and off the record, candidates are willing to discuss what we consider, you know, sensitive issues like torture, horrible human rights conditions in, for example, in the Uzbek prisons, or even, you know, Gulnar Karimova's name comes up in some of the discussions. But when it's big broadcast debate, you don't hear those issues. They're more civil, you know.
So these things are not these sensitive topics that you are talking about. These are discussed only in private gatherings or small gatherings, not in a political release. Is it what you are saying?
To some extent, they are. But again, when it's on the record, when it's being broadcast specifically, you know, again, when it's live, you don't hear people, you know, talk about it. And most of the debates are quite orchestrated, quite, you know, set up. And you don't have long debates. So, you know, they usually involve questions from the audience, three or four. And then the moderators are really good at moderating and making sure that, you know, nothing goes off script. But they're still dynamic. I mean, you know, many Uzbeks tell me that we have to, you know, we have to give them some space. They're like, we're learning how to do this, you know, we let us learn, let us experience this. Don't expect perfection from us. We don't have that experience yet. The leading member of the election commission, Sherzad Kudratxo'jayev, told me earlier this week, actually right after the live press conference, that, you know, in Uzbek he said something like, we need three melon seasons to actually have better elections, you know, which means at least three more election seasons or elections to get there. I mean, you know, they tell you things like that. And I mean, there is some truth in that too. But you hear all sorts of views now. I mean, that's something new about this country, you know. I mean, there is a variety of views in this country now.
Okay, Steve, staying in Uzbekistan. So when those political rallies happen, I don't know what shape or form those things takes place. What size of crowd generally they attract?
Well, Nabuhor will be able to answer that one better. I mean, I haven't seen any outside rallies. I've seen televised events. But one other thing that I observed, as Nabuhor said, I mean, to some extent, the more raucous character of what's happening in these elections are a reflection of generally the slightly heightened level of freedom of speech that we've seen in Uzbekistan in recent months and in recent years. And part of that also was echoed by the president in a speech he gave on Constitution Day just a few days ago, where he was responding to this quite scandalous incident when the mayor was taped threatening journalists. And the president implicitly responded to that by saying, no journalists are going to be threatened. Freedom of speech is our priority. And to some extent, you know, that was a reassuring message to have right before the elections. One other thing I found about responsiveness in these elections is there was a blogger who's well-known named Irina Matvienko. She coordinates a site on domestic violence on Facebook. And she noticed that the party platform of Mili Tiklanish was the same text from 2014 and included the year 2014 on their website. And within 20 minutes of blogging about it, they were embarrassed. Clearly, they took it down and they updated their site. So there's this, again, there's this give and take. There's this conversation about the elections, some level of accountability, but no rallies that I can see, Mohammed. Maybe Nabuhor can add to that.
Journalists, you know, seem to have more access to the system now. I mean, I was here in September.
About the rallies. Is there any campaign rally taking place, like in a shape or form that we see during the election times in other countries?
They've been some. Actually, debates have become sort of rally kind of events. You know, people wearing their flags, screaming when the candidates show up, getting up and clapping. So debates are those kind of events. And they've been, actually, the Uzbek Environmental Party has held several rallies. Now that it's gotten a bit cold in Tashkent, you don't really see a lot happening outside. But there are party events every day, and they usually involve hundreds of people.
Okay, so we need to move on. Bruce wants to leave us soon, so let me try to finish the discussion before he does. So there are five political parties on the ballot. So how they differentiate each other, and how they run their campaign? I think earlier, Steve, you were hinting to that. So what are they to talk about their logistics and the way they are campaigning and the finance? So let's continue the podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Steve Sevurlu, human rights consultant on Central Asia, currently with the UN agencies, formerly with Human Rights Watch in Uzbekistan. Nobahar Imamova, a journalist with Voice of America's Uzbek service. Nobahar and Steve is joining us from Uzbekistan. And in Prague, we have Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owazi. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing the upcoming parliamentary elections in Uzbekistan. Welcome back. You know, Bruce, we are mostly talking about the local realities in Uzbekistan. Please feel free to add anything you would like to add or ask questions or speakers on the ground. But let me start with you here. The favorite is obviously the president's party. So logistically speaking, how's this competition between parties are compared and differ from each other in terms of messaging, their positioning? In elections in countries like Uzbekistan, president's party or the ruling party usually treated in a certain way. So how is this competition compared in sort of these aspects?
Well, I think Steve and Nabahar have a much better, much clearer view from where they are. What I've seen from afar here in Prague, it's a little bit better than previous elections. They've always tried to distinguish themselves from one another a little bit, you know, to show that there's something different. You know, one example I would give would be that when they had Steve alluded to the Tashkent mayor a while ago. And I think it was the Adalat party that came out right away after he made those comments and threatened the journalists. And they said, this is unacceptable and harsh, you know, strict measures need to be taken against him right away. And they also mentioned they were siding with the Agency for Media and Information, which the deputy of that organization happens to be one of the daughters of the president. So it seemed pretty safe to side with that. With those statements. But then Mili Tikhlinich came out and said, well, you know, we don't have all the facts yet about this. And so maybe we should wait until a proper investigation. You know, so it's these kind of things that you see, or at least that I've seen. You know, they're a little bit different in their approach to it, you know, but in the end, you know, it's not like they're going after each other, which is what we're more used to in the West, right? You know, one party goes right after another and starts picking apart their policies. Yeah. Everywhere they can. And you don't really see that. It's mild criticism a lot. And I thought it was interesting that Nabahar mentioned earlier that when people do complain about energy, that they talk about old infrastructure. So it seems that Karimov era projects and decisions are still kind of fair game, as long as they're not still being held by the current government. So you can make some kind of tangential criticism about what's been happening in the country, as long as it doesn't direct people to the people who are those that are in power at the moment. And of course, I have to mention, because we've been talking about the debates. I think for me, the classic moment from the debates will always be that one in late November when the guy was speaking up for the Green Party and came out in favor of the nuclear power plant. That was just brilliant, and said that this is something we need. And someone had mentioned this is the only Green Party in any country in the world that actually is pro-nuclear.
Wow, that's interesting. Any other striking points? I mean, we are talking about debates. Any other striking points that you might have noticed, Steve or Nobahar?
As a news junkie, political junkie, I'm watching all of them, and I really find them entertaining, as Bruce mentioned, some of those moments. I mean, there is a lot of inconsistency, you know, and Uzbeks are still learning how to debate. I mean, sometimes they rule themselves out, you know. They start by some of the, even candidates, they try to make a point, but by the end of their sentences, they're actually saying something else. So, you know, there's very little political training. These people are not really... you know, going through a lot of, let's say, trainings or preparation for this. What's really interesting, and, you know, we should definitely mention this, is that the campaigns are all state funded. Everything about elections is, you know, is all about state funding. So if you're running for Oli Majlis, you get about $1,000. If you're running for the regional council, you get about $200. And if you're running for a district council, you get $100. That's all you get to campaign as an individual candidate. And then parties are all state funded. So parties have their money for the campaign. So I recently found out that they're actually spending a lot by Uzbek standards for these political ads. So each party has, for example, if they want media organizations running sort of equal opportunity campaigns, so they take ads from all five parties, and each party pays about 10 million soms for per term. So they've, so far, each party is supposedly spent about, I believe, close to $10,000 for their political ads.
So that's
so there is some transparency when it comes to the process. So, and I think that's interesting, because we've never really heard this being discussed before. Really, you know, what's also new is that now the government openly says that there are nearly 2 million Uzbeks abroad who are eligible to vote, and they want them to actively participate in the process. So there was a press conference 2 days ago here in Tashkent about that. It was a live press conference where I asked the members of the election commission about why they actually expect that Uzbeks abroad would come to vote, you know, and how would any candidate, if elected, serve them, in what capacity, and what kind of campaigning has been taking place abroad, right, among these millions of Uzbeks. Very quickly, Adolat, the Justice Party, responds to that question of mine through a long statement. We got a kind of a very, short but clear answer, I thought. Basically,
what he said.
The deputy chairman of the Election Commission, Mahmoud Islamov, said that the, you know, the state's role, the commission's role, is basically to create conditions for the Uzbeks to vote. So it's completely up to them to use the system. But the Justice Party said, yes, we must campaign among the Uzbeks abroad. Their voices are relevant. We want to listen to their, you know, ideas, to their grievances. To, we are not ignorant of them. But yes, we may not be actively seeking the vote. We may not be actively campaigning among them, but we do consider them a very important part of the electorate. So at least there is that statement. There are some, you know, differences between the parties. I want to just briefly answer to that question of yours, Mohammed. So President's Party, right, Liberal Democrats, they're supposed to be the most liberal. I mean, there is something of a political spectrum now in Uzbekistan. So we've mentioned that Milliy Tiklanish, they call them a party of national revival, a national reconstruction. So they're the sort of right in this political spectrum. And then you have the Justice Party, you have the People's Democratic Party, and then the Ecological Party, Environmental Party, I say. They're somewhere in the middle. And the Liberal Democrats are pushing for more economic freedom, business freedom, and the rule of law, human rights, even democratic values are often mentioned by the People's Democratic Party, by justice. And all of them have young candidates. I mean, I think it's safe to say that the new Uzbek parliament will have a lot of young people. I mean, that's everybody's safe bet at this point.
Is there, maybe, Steve, you want to jump in here.
Yeah. I mean,
is this straightforward, clear among the ordinary people in Uzbekistan, the voters, which party stands where and for what? Is this straightforward, clear there?
It's not straightforward at all. As I was saying, you know, a lot of people are very cynical. Unfortunately, despite all the, you know, the frenzied work that Nabuhur is describing that is going on, there's just this long, absolutely almost three-decade-long legacy of atomization in politics, of repression and suppression of freedom of speech that, you know, the government is going to have to overcome with a lot more than this. I mean, when the president hasn't himself stood at a mic and answered questions of journalists and done a single press conference, then it's hard to model the kind of openness that you need for free and fair elections. I think that's a recommendation we're hearing again and again, and that people like me are making, which is that this has to come from the president. He has to give open press conferences where he takes critical questions from journalists, and that will, you know, ripple through the system. That's a lot better than standing up and giving a speech to insiders. And I should say, this is not about ordinary folks. I spoke today with human rights activists about what they think about this election. And a lot of them told me that they were very worried. They felt that once these elections are over, that the spotlight will again sort of drift away from Uzbekistan, and that they feared again some sort of backlash or closing or less attention to human rights issues. One really hopes that's not the case. But, you know, those kinds of fears are still very strong. That climate of fear has to be overcome. And finally, I spoke with another activist who wanted to run in these elections. And she told me off the record that she was questioned by the security services. And they said, you know, you're just too radical. You're too independent. So sorry, you got to wait your turn. And this is not now. So there's been a lot of experiences. And I think this is the definite growing pains for Uzbekistan.
Interesting.
And hopefully the political space opens up more after this is over, not less.
Very interesting. I think we also need to be wrapping up discussion very soon. We are talking about this, all these, in the absence of the Uzbek authorities. And I wanted the Uzbek authorities to have their own say in this discussion, but none of them responded to my messages. I sent a number of emails, especially to those who were in D.C. to promote what they call New Uzbekistan. No idea why they don't like to talk to us. Final points, Bruce, it's definitely something Uzbek authorities would like to promote as a big change in Uzbekistan. But what should be our takeaway from this entire process?
Well, you know, I guess you could look at this as a learning exercise and probably being a little bit better than previous elections. I would expect that a lot of the current deputies won't have seats after this next election, because this will be a kind of a superficial sign that things are changing. You're going to replace the old guard with the new. I don't know what percentage that might be, but I would suspect that, I haven't seen a list of the candidates, unfortunately, the current candidates, but I would bet that probably more than half of the current candidates will not return. That said, almost half the candidates are 50 years old, or all the current MPs are 50 years old or older. So that'll be easy to replace, so that the Mirziyoyev can show that this is a different kind of parliament. If there was a little bit more of a mix-up in the percentages of seats that the parties have, because if you look at the 2009 elections and 2014 elections, the seats didn't change very much at all. You know, so you'll probably get a little bit of a shakeup there. But at the end of the day, I think you're probably going to come away. I figured this was going to be a disappointment to a lot of people who were, you know, thinking that Mirziyoyev was a big reformer, that this would be a moment where they would have to realize that probably things didn't, in parliamentary elections, probably things didn't change very much at all, if at all, from previous elections. But if you look at it as a learning process, then maybe the elections in, 2024 will be a lot more spirited and feature some of the things that we've come to associate with a political battle for seats in parliament.
Yeah, very cautious take, Bruce. So one final thing, Steve, I mean, you guys are very much connected with observers on the ground. And of course, you might be observing in your capacity. The next day after the election, what kind of report you imagine OSCE will be releasing? What would be the highlights of that?
We haven't mentioned the OSCE mission, which is historically the largest, I think, so far that it has sent. And it's being headed by the same person that observed the last presidential elections, I believe, Tana de Zulueta. There's 250 short-term observers, 30 long-term observers, 11 other core experts. So you've got a big mission. Plus, you had the UN reported that in an unprecedented request from the Uzbek government, they were actually invited to advise several months ago on how to run these elections in a more effective way. So you have seen, again, a level of, one of the results, of course, will be that Uzbekistan allowed observers to come in relatively unhindered, and that, you know, it's allowing, you know, people like me and Nabuhor to cover this, to watch this closely. And so that is one of the features, is definite openness. I think another takeaway for me, which is interesting, which I think Nabuhor alluded to and Bruce alluded to, which is youth and this question of secular versus conservative. Milli Tikhlanish, we saw a woman excluded from running for the parliament because it came out that she had some racy pictures or less than conservative photographs, and that she was forced out of the campaign. And like it or not, I think a lot of people in the elite and in politics are thinking about that question of where is Uzbekistan headed after these elections? Is it going to get more conservative? Is it going to open up more, as Nabihor said? Is the emphasis going to be on economic development, or is it going to be another trajectory? Mm-hmm. So a lot will be decided, even though these elections are not free and fair. I think that's what I'm taking away, which is that there's a process of profound change. It's not quite democratic change, but it is open. And, you know, of course, I think the last thing that I would mention is we need more voices. We need critical voices. We need the independent candidates and even the opposition to be allowed to participate in these elections, I think, in order to fulfill that idea of reform. That cannot be done without criticism and without opposition.
Opposition. Okay, great. And Nabihor,
and there, I think, Steve, you're not gonna, I think it's safe to believe that you're not gonna get what you want. In a sense that, you know, this campaign confirmed to me, you know, to observers like us, that the Mirziyoyev administration, the system, is not gonna open the space for what we call opposition or so-called Uzbek opposition. We heard consistently again and again that nobody from the outside will join the political process in Uzbekistan. Whatever opposition will emerge, it should emerge from within the country. Whatever critical voices are there, it should be from within the country. So the system is not having that conversation. I don't believe that, this election will confirm that. So the day after election, I think we will be more sure that all those critical voices who would like to be a part of this process are not welcome here. And I think the system is gonna make that very clear. We will definitely have more women in every level. So you know, in Ali Majlis and in the regional councils, in the district councils, but 5 registered parties will have it.
Okay, with this, unfortunately, we have to end the discussion here. Thank you very much, Nabihor Imomova, a journalist with the Voice of America's Uzbek service, Steve Severlu, human rights lawyer, currently based in Uzbekistan, and Bruce Banier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia, Blog, Kishlok, Owozi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time today.
Thank you for having us.
Great discussion,
thank
guys.
You. Thank you. Yep. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for Southern Central Asia. Please join us next week. Until then, bye-bye.